Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio on KVRF. Tonight, we're continuing our Iditarod Musher series. Tonight, we have on guest Jake Berkowitz calling in from Big Lake, Alaska. Jake, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great. How are you doing, Robert?
Pretty good, thanks. How's the weather over your way?
Oh, it's a beautiful dog running. We wish we could have a little more snow, but it's about 15 degrees right now and beautiful starlit night.
You know, a lot of folks think, when they think of Big Lake, they think, of course, of Martin Boozer and some of the other big names over that way. But what is your area like? I've been over to your place one time, and you're on the other side of the road from Martin, at least the other side of the highway. More of a swampy area, isn't it?
Yeah, we actually have a real great place to train out of. Unfortunately, we don't do much fall training over here. We actually truck 42 dogs a day over to Kinnick to four-wheeler train because it is a little swampy, but when it freezes up and the snow flies, you can't beat training in this area. We're about a mile off of the Iditarod Trail and right on the Aurora Dog Mushers trail, so it's a pretty amazing area to train out of.
You know, when you mention the Kinnick area, of course, everybody thinks, when they think of Kinnick, they think of the Reddingtons. You guys do a lot of, I don't know you in particular, but a lot of guys do training right there on Kinnick Goose Bay Road. Is that where you run as well?
Yeah, that is where we run. Right now, since there's so much water freezing up, we don't really get off the side of the road very much. But yeah, we are able to run right now about 30 miles alongside the road. Then once it really freezes up, we're able to go towards Point McKenzie. We're also able to go more towards Wasilla. But, yeah, most of the training right now is right along KGB Road.
So you have a busy schedule coming up, starting with, I believe, the Sheep Mountain 150 race coming up in mid-December. Then you have teams entering in the brand-new Top of the World 350. And then I'm sure the Kinnick and the other races as the season progresses. What's going on over in your kennel? I know it's not just you running dogs, is it?
Yeah, no, we do have a really busy race season coming up. I have two other guys riding dogs with me. Marcus Ingebrigtsen will be racing my second team in the Quest. And then Alex Buteau will be getting qualified this year for Iditarod and running my puppies next year in the Iditarod. So, yeah, it's a real busy race season, kind of the way we like it. We race as we train. So we're going to be training a lot, racing a lot, and hopefully that will pay off come Iditarod and Yukon Quest.
Very cool. So if you can, Jake, Jake Berkowitz is our guest tonight on Mushing Radio. Tell us a little bit about your introduction to mushing. I know you hail from Minnesota, then you headed over to Michigan and somehow ended up in Alaska. Give us a little history, if you can.
Yeah, I was born in Minnesota and then ended up starting to guide dog sledding trips at around 19 years old in Michigan for Nature's Kennel. Quickly realized that although I love bringing dog sledding to the public and guiding, my real passion was racing, and ended up running my first Iditarod out of Nature's Kennel in 2008. Once I came up and finished that Iditarod, I was offered an opportunity with Zach Steer and Bob Bunsen to come and train their dogs up in Sheep Mountain, Alaska, and go ahead and race their Iditarod team that year. I ran Iditarod that year, and then I was fortunate enough to come back the next year, help Zach train for Iditarod and the Quest. And then after that, I was given the opportunity to buy out John Little's kennel, and now we've begun Apex Kennels and our racing scene.
And if I remember correctly, a couple of years ago, you were a force to be reckoned with. I remember that Copper Basin win where you beat out Lance Mackey, who was the reigning champion at that point. How did that feel for you as a young – you weren't a young musher. You had an Iditarod or two under your belt. But, you know, beating out a legend like Mackey, how did that feel at the kennel there?
Well, I hope we're still a force to be reckoned with. But, yeah, it was a great feeling. That was kind of the first opportunity – that I had to be racing my own dogs, and we came out swinging in the Sheep Mountain, taking second to Lance, and that was just a great feeling. You know, I'll take second to Lance any day of the week. And then coming a couple weeks later to the Copper Basin and you know, I knew I had a shot. You know, I didn't know if I had a shot to win, but I knew I had a shot with an incredible dog team to at least perform pretty well. And, you know, we ran the dogs like they were trained to do. We didn't change it for anyone else. And we got out there and we took a lead and we weren't going to back off. And it was a pretty incredible feeling not to only beat Lance, but just to see the incredible abilities of those dogs that we'd been training so hard for. And it really paid off in that race.
You know, Jake, if I may, my next question is, you're a big guy compared to a lot of mushers out there, a big stout guy. How does that play into it for you, for better or worse, when you're out there on the trail? Because you'll hear guys and gals like Dee Dee Genro, she was on our show a few months ago, say, you know, you don't need a whole lot of weight back there. The dogs are already working hard enough. So you happen to be the first big guy that we've had on the show, so I'd like to get your take on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, being light is definitely an advantage. I've actually dropped about 65 pounds since the Quest, you know, getting really ready for this race season and hope to be down another 10 pounds by the start of the Quest. But, you know, I think it definitely is an advantage, but it definitely hasn't hurt us. You know, we won the Copper Basin with a record-setting speed, and that was a really fast trail. Then you go all the way to this year with the Kinnick 200, which was a record slow trail. I think I have the record for the slowest Kinnick 200 win and the fastest Copper Basin win.
Wow.
So you're taking two ends of the spectrum. You're taking a very, very fast Copper Basin, which we set the record. Then you're taking a very, very slow, heavy snow year in the Kinnick 200, and we went and won that. So I think it has to do a lot with the dogs' training, how we run them, and how successful we are with that. But, yeah, it definitely is an advantage, and that's why we've dropped down almost 70 pounds since the Quest, and yeah, hope to even be in better shape, but I think we've done okay so far.
You know, 65, 70 pounds is nothing to sneeze at. How in the world did you lose all that weight?
You know, we got a goal of, you know, winning Iditarod in the Quest, and, you know, working hard all summer long and eating right and taking care of 60 dogs by myself this summer while working all the time, you know, it kind of comes off, but yeah, we're definitely very, very focused, not only on the dog's strength this year, but trying to bring me into top performance come racing season.
Well, my next question or actually statement is congratulations on your recent wedding to your lovely wife there. How is that working out, being a newly wedded man getting ready for a race season like this?
Yeah, Robin's always been a great support system for me, and she's just as integral in this kennel as I am, both, you know, loving puppies and sewing dog jackets and dog blankets and just doing everything behind the scenes and kind of lets me get a little bit of the limelight with the dogs. But, you know, she's really focused on us performing well this year. So our focus really hasn't changed. You know, we started training the same time we always start training. We didn't really take any time off for the wedding. And we got right back into training, and it was great. It was a great wedding, great time to see mushing friends and family. But our focus really is running dogs. You know, we have summer time to be thinking about running dogs, but do a few other things. But as soon as September rolls around, we got one thing on our mind here.
So you said you started training in September, which is pretty much the norm for most kennels, whether they're doing mid-distance or long-distance and mid-distance like your kennel there, Apex Kennel. What do you do in the off-season? You know, you hear all the stories. Last week we had on the Mushing Mortician, you know, and then we had on Ramey Smith, who's a log home builder, and, you know, the fishermen and all that. What goes on in your guys' world during the off-season?
Yeah, my wife Robin works for Alaska Fish and Game. She was out on the Susitna River, actually right where we run dogs past in Kinnick and other races. And then John Baker and I have an operation down at the Alaska Native Heritage Center doing dog rides there at the center and showing people puppies and Iditarod dogs and kind of giving them a little demonstration of a checkpoint and all of our gear. So I actually commute from Big Lake down to Anchorage every day. So it keeps us very, very busy.
You know, people that come to Alaska are totally fascinated with the mushing lifestyle and, of course, being able to pet the dogs and all that. What are some of those questions that those guys ask you? I'm sure you've heard everything from the goofy ones from the little kids to the real technical ones from some real enthusiasts. Can you share some of the comments you heard this summer from some of your guests?
Oh, yeah, you know, there's such a wide spectrum, and if you ask me during the season, I could probably rattle off a few more of them. But, you know, there's questions all the way, you know, every question you get multiple times, probably 40, 50 times a day are, these are not the sled dogs you guys race with, or are these Siberians? And you kind of have to go through and explain that these are, you know, Alaskan Huskies. These are your long-distance runners of the dog world. You know, you get, you know, questions asking if they attack on command and teaching them that, no, these dogs are not vicious dogs. They're very friendly dogs, but they're very focused. And then you get the kids that just want to come and play with puppies. So, you know, it definitely keeps you on your toes, and you try and be a good ambassador for the sport because you're seeing thousands and thousands of people throughout the summertime, and that might be their only interaction with the dog team. So we just really try and be good ambassadors for the sport. And once they get behind that dog team and get out, go on a ride, you know, you've already got them hooked on dog racing.
Do you guys use one of those big carts, or do you guys use something else?
Yeah, we have a big cart. We can put about 6 adults in it, and we have 14 dogs hooked up to the front of it. And, you know, people get about a 5-minute ride and just kind of get a little experience. It's $10 a person and 5-minute ride, and people love just being able to sit behind a dog team just for a little bit.
Very cool. And you said you work in conjunction with John Baker, who was the winner of the Iditarod a couple of years ago. How has that relationship formed over the years? Of course, he's a little bit different musher than a lot of guys down here in this part of the state. A little bit different dogs is what I'm getting at. What have you learned from somebody like John Baker?
Oh, John has been a great friend and continues to be a great friend. And there's nothing you cannot learn from John. You just have to sit back and listen and glean from him. And he's been, like I said, such a good friend and has not held anything back for me. And I think part of my success in Iditarod and the Quest, especially the Quest last year, came from just conversations I had from John. John actually came down and spent 2 weeks at our place during the Quest training his dogs out of here. So it's really turned into a great friendship. But John, along with all the other great mentors I've had, Zach Steer, Bob Bunsen, and a lot of the other people, you just have to sit back and listen to them and take the information from them. But John definitely is, you know, one of those top-notch mushers, and it's been a great privilege to become good friends with him and listen to what he has to say.
You know, I heard him speak at one of the symposiums here in Willow, and man, that guy, he's so laid back, so low key. You know, he is, like you said, he's a force to be reckoned with out there on the trail. But he's not your typical, you know, typical musher that boasts a lot about, you know, his dogs and doing this and doing that. He's just real low key and real laid back, isn't he?
Yeah, John. You know, he's very focused and driven, not only dog mushing, but business and his foundation and in politics. And he's definitely a great role model, not only for the native youth, but for everyone. You know, he's a great role model, and it was a great privilege having him actually be the one to marry myself and Robin in September.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. You mentioned you had 60 dogs in your kennel, and you also mentioned that you had bought out John Little's team a couple of years ago. I remember when he was getting out of mushing and trying to place all of his dogs. Are you still running a lot of his dogs, or have you bred some up since then?
Yeah, I was actually just adding up what we have in the kennel. We actually have 53 dogs right now and 3 house dogs. But yeah, John gave me a great opportunity to buy out his kennel, and he was really focused on, you know, seeing those lines kind of stay the same. And although we do have some of the dogs that John bred up, we have been doing our own breeding, and this really is Apex Kennels now. You know, we obviously have the famous Solomon still in the yard racing on my main team. We have dogs like Solo and a few other ones that John raced for many years. Then we have his first kind of set of breedings that he did with Jeff King, and we have those guys, and then we've repeated that. We've done a few more breedings this year. We've also done a little breeding with John Baker to get some of his lines. So we kind of have 2 lines going right now, a Solomon line and a Summit line, which was one of John's famous dogs, a big gray dog with blue eyes. And hopefully in future years, we'll be able to do kind of a hybrid vigor of Solomon and Summit. But yeah, right now about 80% of our kennel is out of Solomon, which is pretty incredible. You know, we have some amazing young dogs coming up. A lot of dogs that finished their first Iditarod last year are now into my main team and definitely showing that they're capable of what we're going to ask out of them this year. But, yeah, in my opinion right now, there's nothing better out there in the sport than Solomon. I'm sure there's stuff just as equal, but I'd be hard-pressed to see anything better coming out of anyone else than what Solomon's producing.
Yeah, a few minutes ago, Jake, you had mentioned that one of your guys is running your puppy team, and I believe you said in the Quest. And we have a wide variety of mushing folks that listen to our show. Can you describe what that is exactly? When people think of puppies, they think of cute, cuddly little dogs running around. Just give us a little bit of an education on what a puppy team is.
Yeah, well, in the Quest this year, I actually have a true B team getting run. And they're going to be there competing. I'm hoping that he can second our Rookie of the Year awards this year. But next year I'll be having a puppy team running at Iditarod. And what a puppy team is, it's something we've done last year as well, and that's been going on in a lot of the top racing kennels, is they're taking our young dogs, our, you know, 14-month-olds to 20-month-olds, and taking them at a much easier pace throughout Iditarod, basically showing them the race course, seeing who can handle the 1,000 miles, and just making it a really good experience all the way from the start to the finish in an effort that those dogs will then enter into our main racing program. I have 6 dogs that finished Iditarod last year off the puppy team that are really showing that they're, you know, top caliber dogs. And then there's also 5 females that are in my B team that finished Iditarod showing that they're really earning their spot possibly as future breeding dogs in our kennel. So it's just a really slower-paced Iditarod schedule or a Yukon Quest schedule if you're going to take a puppy team into that. That's just giving those guys a first glance at Iditarod without really stressing them out.
When you mention slower, what does that mean? You know, the top guys are running in 9, 10, 11 days. What does slower mean for your puppy team? Is it, 12, 13 days? What are we talking about?
No, you know, a lot of people run a 12, 13-day puppy race. I like to see them about 2 days behind the winners. I'm not going to say a certain time frame because if it's a 9-day race, I'd like to see them at 11 days. You know, if it's a 10-day race like we had a couple years ago, maybe 12 days. But that's also saying that everything's going perfect. I want them to really be reading their dogs. But a really comfortable schedule for me with my puppies is 6 hours running, 6 hours rest. I did that when I ran Zach's young dog team in 2009, and I ended up finishing with all 16 dogs. And some of those dogs are now in my main race team, with a couple dogs that John Little let me borrow, and then I ended up buying his kennel out. But some of those young dogs were as young as 14 months old, and all 16 of them finished. So you're really reading the dogs, but I like that even run rest schedule for a young dog team because you can really get their circadian rhythm really in check, and they really feed off of that rhythm.
And how much of that is on the musher? Obviously, that will be the first time for that musher to run the Iditarod. How much, in terms of pace and planning and all that, is geared towards that rookie musher?
I think a lot of it is. You know, I think he really is going to feel a sense of accomplishment at the end of that race. But a lot of that comes down to the dogs and also to me. It's my job to prepare, in this case, Alex, for the Iditarod. I'm not going to send him out there unprepared. This year he'll be racing the Sheep Mountain. He'll be racing the Knick. He'll be racing the Don Bowers and the Northern Lights. So he's going to have 950 miles of racing this year as well as all the racing next year before Iditarod. So we're really going to put him through the ringer to make sure he's ready. But he's an incredible young man, and he's listening and learning, and hopefully we can get him to be pretty incredible musher in the future.
Jake Berkowitz is our guest tonight on Mushing Radio. Jake, if we can, let's switch over to Iditarod. And what I want to bring up is what happened to you and how the injury affected you, and of course how that has transferred over. I know I saw a blurb a month or two ago about you working with a knife company to come up with something that is supposed to be good for all mushers. Can you give us the story a little bit then how it's turned into this collaboration with the knife company?
Yeah, basically what was happening is we were coming off of a pretty great run all the way to Unalakleet, and about 3 hours outside, we were just stopping to give the dogs a snack. That happened to be a fish snack. The whole race, our meat had kind of been thawed and then refrozen, so we were having to separate it. And something we do thousands of times is separate our fish out just with a knife and just easily prying it. And somehow that knife kind of turned and tweaked and went right through my hand and actually severed the artery. And I ended up tying it off out there kind of in the field, just a real tight knot over it. And when we got in to Unalakleet, I definitely knew I was in trouble. I didn't know how bad it was. They got me into the hospital there and sewed it up. And luckily, there was also a pretty experienced and well-known surgeon following the race. And he kind of gave his opinion. And my father, who's also a doctor, and Mark Dornman, and they deemed it probably best for me to get withdrawn from the race. It was definitely the right call, and I'm not second-guessing I did or not at all. The hand continued to bleed all the way into Anchorage, and the hand was about, you know, the size of a large water balloon, just filling with blood because it hadn't been drained yet. And, it definitely was the best call for me and the safety of the dogs. Kind of looking back on it, we're definitely disappointed, and I think that's fueling just how ready we are for this racing season, not only losing the weight, but just our training program and what we're expecting to do. We're not just expecting to go in and hope for top five finishes in the Quest. We're going to go and really try and give it a go of it. But trying to take, you know, a bad experience and turn it good, not only for yourself, but for the rest of the community. We've talked to some knife makers and hopefully are in the production phases of possibly putting out a knife that is not only safer for us, but is used for a lot of things that we use it for. You know, 99% of injuries and knife injuries are definitely user error, and mine was no different. I was using a knife for something that it wasn't designed for. And like so much stuff in mushing, because stuff isn't necessarily designed for mushing, we're using stuff that it's not designed for. And we use our knife for so many things, from cutting a neckline to chiseling ice out of our runners to separating meat. We're just trying to produce a knife that is actually made for doing that stuff rather than taking a pre-existing thing and forcing it to be used for what we need it to.
And you said that hopefully it's in production. I remember seeing something about it being ready for the Sheep Mountain race. So that's only a couple of months away. Is that still on track, or are you guys still working on that?
You know, we're still trying to work on it. We're, you know, had some hiccups with different knife makers, and we're still trying to find the right one. We definitely have an idea and a prototype in mind, and we just need to find somebody that's looking to make it. But, we definitely have some ideas. We're definitely not going to put it out there before it's ready. So, yeah, we'll definitely be seeing when it's going to come out here in the next couple months.
If I saw correctly, I believe on your website, jakeberkowitz.com, you have on there that you're attending University of Alaska for paramedic training. Does that have anything to do with what happened out there on the trail?
No. You know, I took care of myself, probably with some of my EMT knowledge, but I did what all Iditarod mushers should know how to do, which is just take care of themselves, because if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of your dogs. But no, medicine's always interested me. My father's a doctor. I entertained the thought of becoming a doctor, but the schooling is what kind of threw me off of that. But kind of the life of being a paramedic and a firefighter, at least having that in my back pocket so that mushing isn't the only thing I rely on in the future, is kind of something that I'm interested in.
It's definitely a cool career. I've been down that path myself, and it's very rewarding to be able to do something like that for the community. Jake Berkowitz is our guest tonight. Jake, we have about 5.5 minutes left. What else do you want to talk about? What's what's up and coming for you? Something that we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, you know, I think our lifestyle here is just really exciting. I really enjoy working with these dogs here. They're a pretty incredible group of dogs. This year, I'm really focusing on 18 dogs. We've kind of divided our kennel up into four different groups. I have 18 dogs that have all finished either the Iditarod or the Yukon Quest. A lot of returning dogs, some of my main leaders, Pixie and Conman and Leno and Mullet, they're all back. And then I've also have 12 dogs in my B team that my handler Marcus is training. And kind of out of those 30 dogs, all 30 of those were training the same. We're just focusing on different groups. Out of those 30, we're going to be obviously fielding two Yukon Quest teams. One thing we haven't seen much in the past out of these dogs is injuries, so we're kind of banking on a smaller group of dogs and experienced dogs so that we only have two reserves, which is really great because we're really able to focus on all of our dogs and not have a huge group of dogs that we're trying to weed down. And then we also have a group of 12 dogs that Alex is training that he'll be qualifying with, 10 yearlings and two adult leaders, so that he's not super overwhelmed by large groups of dogs and he's really giving the dogs the focus that they deserve. Last night, I believe, down in each handler has their own cabin, I believe there was 8 dogs in the cabins between the two handlers. So these dogs are really getting a lot of attention and a lot of focus and really giving them the life that they deserve as a sled dog.
Very cool. And you mentioned with 2 handlers there, so you got quite a crew running dogs at all time. When you guys run dogs, do you guys all go out together? Is it, staged, team A is going to go first on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so on and so forth? Do you guys run as a team?
No, we're definitely split up a little bit. You know, we all are in communication and we all help each other out, hooking up and that type of stuff. Right now we're trucking dogs and we're running our dog teams about 6 days a week, all the way from yearlings to adults. Each dog is running about 6 days a week right now. So we're trucking 42 dogs over. So that's about an hour of trucking a day. But yeah, we'll run dogs in the afternoon and then come back and then load up another dog team and head back out. But yeah, we're always in constant communication. Right now I have one of the guys riding with me all the time just so that they can see what I'm seeing. Tomorrow, my team actually has the day off, and I'm going to ride on the back of my puppy team so I can see how they're kind of shaping up. I trained them the first month of the season in addition to my team and then kind of handed them over to Alex. Marcus, who's running my B team, is running his team. I really want these guys to feel ownership over their teams. Although I'm the owner and kind of what I say goes with the dogs, I want each one of these guys to really feel a sense of bond to their dog teams. And with that sense of bond is going to lead to the incredible care that they're already giving their teams.
Sure. Jake, I have one final question. I ask this to all you Iditarod guys is, like I said, a lot of folks listen to this show, everybody from the up and coming guys that are making that jump into the big races to the guys that have, a couple of 3 dogs in the backyard hooking them up to sleds. What can you give as one piece of advice to those guys, whether it's the backyard musher or the up-and-coming guy that's, packed up everything in a U-Haul and moved to Alaska?
I just say stay true to yourself and don't get caught up with what everyone else is doing. We're all in this sport because we love dogs, and just stick to that and do right by the dogs. But if you're doing right by the dogs and you're doing what you love, you're really not doing anything wrong.
That's great advice. Jake, anything else before we go? About a minute and a half left. If not, we can always end early.
No, it was a real pleasure talking to you, and we're definitely excited for our race season. This season we're going to be putting 3 teams in the Sheep Mountain, 2 teams in the Top of the World, 3 teams in the Kinnick, I believe 3 teams in the Don Bowers, 1 in the Northern Lights, 2 in the Yukon Quest, 1 in Iditarod, and 1 in the Kobuk 440. So it's a busy year already, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us this evening. I'll definitely send over some links and things when it gets posted. And good luck to all of you guys, and we'll definitely keep in touch, okay?
Yep, thank you very much, and have a great night from Apex Kennels.
Thank you. That was Jake Berkowitz, jakeberkowitz.com. Check him out on the internet as well as Facebook. He's pretty active on there. So watch out for this guy and his teams, because I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with here in 2012-2013. This is Robert Forto on behalf of Mushing Radio. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.